Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, and this is your daily dose on all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Wednesday, hump day, everybody, February 5th, and we're going to get into a few things here. One news tidbit, I didn't get to address the Antonio Brown interview from this past weekend, so I'll lead off with that as our top story for the day, but then going to get into a little bit of some debating points. Going to talk about who should be the next Steelers in the Hall of Fame. Well, we could talk about Alan Faneca. There's a few others on that list as well. And then I'm going to wrap it up with some discussion on the Rooney Rule. I wanted to talk about that earlier when all the coaching hire was happening. But I figured now's a good time out. The Super Bowl's over. We're in Black History Month and the impact of that on the Rooney's legacy. I'll get into all of that in this show. Let's do it. So I know you're probably sitting there thinking like, wait, what? Antonio Brown? Ah, great. Well, if you didn't get to see this interview, it was a 180 from where we've seen Antonio Brown go in recent, over the past year, you know, since basically when he left the Steelers a little less than a year ago. You know, we've seen the destructive path he's been down on and just doing things. You know, he threw away his contract with the Raiders and all the things he's been getting into, the incidents with the police, with his ex-girlfriend. Well, he's now on a bit of a redemption tour. You know, he apologized to his ex, Chelsea Kyrus. He apologized to the Hollywood, Florida Police Department. Then he went and apologized to Juju Smith-Schuster. And, you know, and it was rather like, wow, okay, he's saying that about him. Now, that also only came after Juju Smith-Schuster said during the Super Bowl week, you know, that he's concerned for Antonio Brown and he worries about him. So, you know, that might have been more of Antonio Brown, you know, kind of having to come out and say that and realize that. But the fact that he even did, I think that says that there's something different going on right now in his head. Though, you know, trying to get in Antonio Brown's head is a very dangerous endeavor. However, you know, being the ex-Steeler that he is, he brought up the Steelers in an interview he had with Josina Anderson from ESPN. And this happened over the weekend. With all the Super Bowl stuff, it was hard to keep up with everything that happened. But I wanted to talk about it because I found this kind of interesting. He said, I think I owe the whole NFL an apology on my past behavior. I think I could have done a lot of things better. And he went into specifics and he said, you know, he could have left the Steelers much better. And he started to say that he might not have had to, but then he kind of recoiled on that. And, you know, it was really interesting listening to, you know, Josina trying to see where he's willing to take this and how far he's actually willing to go. But, you know, I look at this interview and I see him apologizing about that. You know, he said Mike Tomlin's a good person and, you know, and he, you know, he asked, you know, Josina sort of asked him, like, would you reach out to him? He's like, well, he's not my coach anymore. So it's obvious Antonio isn't, you know, he's not, and no one's ever going to be fully back from everything that he's done. But I do think that there's a chance that this whole incident of being a, you know, having a warrant out for his arrest, having the charges put up against him, being in an anti-suicide smock in court and having to be in jail, there's a chance that hit him and that got through to him, at least in some form, saying that, dude, you're not untouchable. Just because you got all this money, just because you've had all this success, and just because you've been on this fame craze for the past, you know, decade of your life, does not mean that you are free, have free reign to do whatever you want. And it's obvious that at least got to him in some fashion. Now, whether or not it's going to last forever, that's what we got to see. But I also found this interesting. If you follow him on Twitter still, you know, on February 3rd, he came out and he made ploys for help. He reached out. He said, he tweeted out, if my idol Michael Vick can make a comeback, I can too. And he asked Vick, if you're in Florida, let's throw and talk about a comeback. Would be an honor. Michael Vick, of course, coming back from, you know, the dogfighting charges when he was sent to jail after being you know, the number one quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons, then coming back and playing for the Eagles and having some spectacular years with them, being in a very exciting offense. And of course, being a Pittsburgh Steeler after that, then also he, you know, just a minute later, he tweeted out to Plaxico Burress, another former Steeler, said, need a route session with Plaxico Burress and a big interview about his comeback. It's time to bounce back. Inspiration. And Plaxico Burress, of course, you know, when he was with the Steelers, it wasn't really any problems. But when he went to New York, You know, he became a Super Bowl champion, caught their game-winning touchdown pass, but then he also had the incident where he shot himself in the leg accidentally. And in New York, you're not allowed to possess a firearm, and that was a problem. And he went to jail for that. But he did come back to the NFL, and he was even on the Steelers for a short while. They brought him back temporarily, and that was short-lived. But Plaxico Burress, Michael Vick, former Steelers, you know, kind of interesting that he reached out to those guys. And also seems calculated, you know? And what has Antonio Brown done lately that's been calculated? You know, there's nothing calculated about, you know, putting videos on Instagram and all the things that he's been doing and throwing gummies at the police and just being the wild, disrespectful person that he is. It makes me think that something got to him or someone got to him, and that someone's like, hey, dude, you're about to throw all this away. And maybe it's something in his head clicked and said, you know what, I do have to stop doing this. You know, it's, and no one can ever say whether it's CTE, whether he's taking drugs, you know, whether, you know, all that stuff. I think the biggest thing is that Antonio Brown hit a point where he realizes he's about to be in a lot of trouble. He's going to need whatever he can to save him. And the only thing that he can save him with is his football skills. And he's burned so many bridges in the NFL. He needs to, you know, mending those bridges isn't going to get him back anywhere, to any of those organizations. I don't think the Bills, the Raiders, or the Steelers would touch him at this point. But if he at least, you know, says the right things, quote unquote, in the media, it would give other teams the space to say, hey, you know what, that guy was great, let's take a shot on him. You know, yeah, how many organizations have done that? I mean, Josh Gordon was given several chances in the NFL. Albert Haynesworth, how crazy he was. You know, there's a lot of teams out there that might say, like, you know, hey, we need a big play wide receiver. If we can get this guy on a good contract that doesn't bankrupt us, why not take the shot? And if he starts to implode, we get him out of here. So it's obvious that this is Antonio Brown making that play. I think it was interesting again that he reached out to, you know, on social media tagging Juju and he even posted a picture of them hugging each other. You know, from back when they were playing together. It's wild to see everything that's come up with this man. But that's the thing though, right? You're not sure which Antonio Brown this is. You know, is he apologizing now so that he can turn around and say, you know, screw all you guys later. There was also a video that came out recently. He was at some event where that Logan Paul guy, the guy that's like a YouTuber / fighter, I don't know what actually made him famous, but he's I guess he's a UFC fighter now, and he called out Antonio Brown and wanted to fight him, and there's a video of him in Logan Paul's face, and Logan Paul's like, I'll fight you right now, and he's like, what's up? He's like smiling. I think Antonio Brown's kind of just like, you know, just like he's just kind of enjoying the moment, enjoying the fame of the moment, and the hype of it. But doing things like that don't demonstrate to me, if I'm a general manager in the NFL, I look at that and I say, nope, he has not learned his lesson, and I'd be scared to touch it. Now, if you're an organization that desperately needs something, and you know you feel secure enough about your locker room, you know, go right ahead, do that, but have a very tight leash on and making sure that Antonio Brown, let him know, like, dude, you got one strike right now, and that's it. So whether or not he makes his comeback, we'll see. But you know, it'll certainly be a major storyline in the NFL and for the Steelers if he ever does make it back to playing and playing at the league level. All right, that's the first segment. Be right back. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Hall of Fame and who should get in next for the Steelers. All right, listen up, guys. You know you guys can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed with Blue Chew. And that's BlueChew.com and blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free. That's F-R-E-E, free. When you use our special promo code NFL, just pay $5 in shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code NFL to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. We're back, and so let's get into some different talking here about the Hall of Fame, because there are legitimate concerns about where the about, you know, Alan Faneca didn't get in, and we talked about how, you know, Peter King's vote with the fringe, with the fringe players and everything. It made me wonder, and you guys can hit me up on Twitter about this too. Remember, at Carter Critiques, if you follow me, I'll follow you back. Hit me up with your opinions. You can also talk about this in the Facebook Locked On Steelers group. But who would be your next Steelers to make the Hall of Fame? Now, I created a top six, a pick six, if you will, of players that I think will eventually get in. I guess it's more than six. But excluding LC Greenwood, I feel like he's one of those guys that should have made the Centennial class. The guy had was part of the greatest defensive line ever. He has the most sacks in the history of the Super Bowl. He has four Super Bowl rings. Come on, how is he not in? And it's all because of that stuff, that dumb stuff that Peter King talks about. Oh, I'm never going to vote for another Steeler from the 70s again. That's ridiculous. So I'm going to exclude LC Greenwood, though. He was a great guy, a great man. A quick story on LC Greenwood. When I was a student, I saw that LC Greenwood was doing an autograph signing at this event, and I had gotten this book from my old man. And it was a Steelers book, and it was about their history, and I was going to get him to be one of the signatures in it. And I was going around getting different Steelers to sign it as a Christmas gift to my pops. And LC Greenwood comes up, and if you know, LC Greenwood wore these yellow shoes. And it was because every time he would make a tackle, he said the announcer would say Joe Green, and he would get mad because he's like, you know, just because I wear, you know, 79, he wears 75, like, come on, man, like don't do that to me. So he started wearing these yellow shoes, and every time he'd make a tackle, he'd kick them in the air. And that would be the way so he could let the announcers know, hey, that was me that did it. And so when I'm in this line and I come up to LC Greenwood, he says, he looks at me and he sees I'm younger. I'm obviously not from the 70s. He's like, you probably don't even know who I am. And he has this like nice, smooth, deep voice. It's just this cool man. Like you tell he was a down brother back in the 70s. And I just say, of course I do, LC. You're the guy with the yellow shoes. And he looks at me with this look. And I'm like, did I say something wrong? And he says, gold, brother. They were gold shoes. And I cracked up. And he had a great conversation. He was a church-going man in Pittsburgh, lived on the East End, lived in like the Homewood Point Breeze area, actually in the area where I grew up. Everything I've ever heard about that guy was he's a great guy. Anyways, not to make this all about LC Greenwood, but here's my top six guys to make the Hall of Fame next for the Steelers, or that should be in the consideration. Some of these guys won't actually make it, but these are the guys who I think should be considered from this recent generation. Number one, Alan Faneca, obviously. I think he's going to get in soon. Dale Lally was telling me that he gets the impression it's only going to take another year or two for Alan to break in. Some people feel that Hutchinson shouldn't have been over in on him because Hutchinson doesn't have a Super Bowl ring. He doesn't have that iconic block that Faneca had for Willie Parker in the Super Bowl. He had less Pro Bowls, less All Pros. So that's an either or situation. You know, three Steelers are getting in this year. Totally understandable for that to happen. In offensive linemen, it's rough for offensive linemen. Tony Boselli's still waiting to get in. That guy deserves to get in. But moving down the line, one overlooked name, one overlooked name that I don't think will ever get in, but should get in for all the things that he did, is James Ferrier. James Ferrier wasn't the Ray Lewis, and he was in a time where he had Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher, Derek Brooks. You had all these other bigger names that they were huge playmakers, but James Ferrier was the glue to the mid-2000s defense, and that's something that Dale told me, because you know, when he was covering him all that time, he said, like, man, if you understood who kept everybody in line, and even if you listen to Troy Polamalu talk about it, go back and read the stuff he said this past weekend. He said when he came on the team for the Steelers, he could rely on James Ferrier to keep other people in line because he was a real captain. And Ferrier was that dude, and he had some of the craziest tackle statistics for the Steelers. I think he still has the most tackles of any player with the Steelers in a single season. I think it's like 141. It was something ridiculous when he first got to the Steelers, and then even when he got older, he was still making plays. He was still keeping everybody in pace. He's a heck of a playmaker. Will always be underappreciated because he didn't have all the interceptions or the sacks or the huge blow-up hits. He was just always in the right spot at the right time. Very physical, could cover, heck of a player, and someone that's totally, I think, underestimated in the annals of time. But again, with all the Steelers that are that have been in the Hall of Fame. You got to me, if you're a Steeler, you have to be extra exceptional. Ooh, I just pulled Antonio Brown. Exceptionalism is what he said once. But you have to be extra exceptional to be to make it in as a Steeler, in my opinion. And James Ferrier, to me, and I think to anyone who watched the Steelers and knew that era, he was exceptional. But to the national audience, he wouldn't be. So that's my reason for why I don't think he's going to get in, even though he should. Next up on the list, Hines Ward. Now, Hines Ward is a very interesting talking point for this era, because if you look at Hines Ward and you think, man, as a Steeler, like, he was the face of the team for quite some time, you know, and you know, because there were your Troy Polamalu was a face, but Hines Ward was like the voice. You know, that guy could light people up on the field, light the plays up on the field, but light the locker room up. You know, when Lyman Sweet dropped the pass, he pulled him in and he was like, come here, man, just make the next play. And he got and then just a few plays later, Lyman Sweet lays somebody out for Heath Miller. You know, Hines Ward brought the receiver position back for the Steelers after the 90s when they lost Yancey Figpen and Charles Johnson. And that's when you saw Plaxico Burress improve. That's when you saw Antoine Randall become a weapon for the Steelers. It was under that guy's tutelage. And Ward, he was that guy for the Steelers. And he's the best blocking receiver in the history of the NFL and a heck of a playmaker, a two-time Super Bowl champion, a one-time Super Bowl MVP. But the problem is that look at his era. He played in the era with too many greats. And just for example, Isaac Bruce just got in. You know, a lot of people would put Isaac Bruce around it because Hines Ward wasn't your typical playmaker wide receiver. In an era when you didn't just have Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. You had Marvin Harrison. Chet Ochocinco, I think that he could get over. But, you know, when you talk about Marvin Harrison, you got Isaac Bruce. You got Torrey Holt, you know, and then you got other guys like Larry Fitzgerald who came in on, like, sort of towards the back half of Hines Ward's career. But and there were very few points in time where I think you could legitimately say Hines Ward is a top five wide receiver in the league because of all the supreme playmakers that existed in his time. And because of that, I don't think Hines Ward would get in. He has great numbers for the Steelers. He leads them all time in receiving, so you'd think that, well, why wouldn't he get in? If Hines ever gets in, I think it would be a senior type of vote. But with all the stuff that receivers got to go through, it took Chris Carter, I think, like 5 years. I'm talking about the Minnesota Vikings, Chris Carter, of course, not me. It took him 5 years to get in, and I think when he retired, he was second to Jerry Rice, and he was like the best possession receiver in the history of the NFL or something like that when he finally called it quits, and it took him time to get in. Hines Ward, I think he's gonna have to wait, a very long time if he ever does get into the Hall of Fame. So he's my number three. Number four, I'm gonna get into is James Harrison. Should be an obvious one, you know, that you think, because he leads the Steelers in all-time sacks. He has a defensive MVP of the year. Unlike Ferrier and unlike Ward, Harrison, you can legitimately say Harrison was the best edge rusher in the NFL for at least a time. In 2008, he was the defensive MVP. He was just a wrecking ball for years for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and there was a time where you could say the Steelers had the best linebacking core, and he was the best of them, and that I think would get, you know, I think that will turn heads and maybe get him in the Hall of Fame eventually. I think, again, he's going to need to wait a while, but you look at that Super Bowl, you know, 43 interception return for a touchdown, arguably the greatest play in Super Bowl history, and those type of things add to your resume. And I think that Harrison will someday get into the Hall of Fame. It may take time. It may take a lot longer than you expect. But I do think eventually the case will be made for James Harrison to say, look, that guy was one of the best edge rushers of his time. He deserves that recognition. Next guy, an obvious one, Ben Roethlisberger. Whenever he retires, he will be in the Hall of Fame. Two Super Bowl rings. You know, and he's bounced in and out of the top five of quarterbacks, but you've always known that he was a threat. And I think there'll be some people to try to push back and say, well, I don't know. But I think the bottom line is common sense will prevail and Ben Roethlisberger will make it in. Maybe not on the first ballot. Maybe he'll get some sort of weird treatment. But I feel like Ben Roethlisberger is a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. Now, my last one, number six, is the guy I was just talking about, Antonio Brown. Now, you're probably thinking, what the heck are you talking about, Chris? But and it was interesting because I saw on Twitter Jerry Dulac was saying absolutely not, he would never get in. And then I saw Ron Cook from the – and both these are two Post-Gazette guys. These are colleagues who have worked together for decades. And they're arguing on Twitter, and Ron Cook's like, I don't know, man. I feel like he should. And Can you really deny Antonio Brown? Yes, he went crazy, but the guy was the best receiver in football for 6 years. The 6 years that he put together were the best numbers of a six-year stretch of numbers for any receiver in NFL history. I don't know how anyone can ignore that. Now, you could say he didn't have a ring. He made the Super Bowl once, and they largely made the Super Bowl because he made some insane plays in the playoffs in his rookie season. But the guy was unguardable for 6 years. It wasn't a flash in the pan. He did that for quite some time. And he did that in an era where Calvin Johnson was playing, where Larry Fitzgerald was playing, where Julio Jones was playing, where Odell Beckham Jr. has been playing. I can go on and on, but he has stood out when he was playing, and so that man he could make insane plays. I feel like he's a guy that would take a long time. Also, it depends on what happens with Antonio Brown next. You know, does he get back to the NFL? Does he redeem himself? That's a story for another time. But I feel like if he never played again right now, it would take a while, but I think eventually voters might yield and be like, all right, we got to let that guy in because he was one of the best we've ever seen. And you'd think that that would work out in his favor. All right, that's that segment. Got one more talking point here, but first, word from our sponsors. So my final talking point for the show for today is going to be on the legacy of the Rooney Rule. Now, of course, this bears a lot of Steelers' importance here because this is the Rooney Rule. It's named after Dan Rooney, is the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, the guy that, everyone talks about the Chief and Art Rooney and how he was the founder of the Steelers and everything, and he was the guy. But it was, if anyone knows anything, when you read the Steelers' history, Dan Rooney is the one that was the catalyst to get the ball rolling and change the mentality of the team to make it the great organization that it's become. But of course, it was under his dad, that was there. Anyways, Dan Rooney, led the charge to introduce a rule back in 2002 for the Rooney Rule. For those who don't know, to make it to help work against discrimination in hiring of head coaches. Sorry for those who already know this. Just a basic, quick run through. Because in 2002, there was a study shown by attorneys that showed that black head coaches would have higher winning percentages and be less likely to be hired and more likely to be fired than their white counterparts. And there were several different people that were able to show that was like, you know what, over the years, these guys, black coaches especially, and this the rule was for minority coaches, but black coaches especially were just given the short end of the stick more times than not. And really, in 2002, what sparked it was Tony Dungy got fired from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he was the guy that was building a great thing there. And then, the next year they win a Super Bowl with John Gruden, which was Tony Dungy's team, and they fall apart after that. And some people might, draw like, well, like Tomlin won a Super Bowl with Bill Cowher's team. Well, no. Bill Cowher's team went 8-8 in his last year. Mike Tomlin took 2 years, won with him, and has kept them competitive since. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers fell into obscurity after Tony Dungy left and John Gruden won his one title. And it also coincided with Dennis Green from the Minnesota Vikings. He got fired the same summer, and he had one losing season in 10 years. 10 years! That's a great accomplishment. That shows that you're able to get your players up to make sure that you're ready to go. We often talk about how Mike Tomlin is a coach who has yet to have a losing season, and he's about to go into what, year 14, year 15? This is a standard that black coaches especially were getting held to, and the Rooney Rule instituted a policy where NFL franchises, when you're interviewing for a coaching position, you had to at least include one minority interview in it. Now, it doesn't mean you have to hire anybody. It doesn't mean that you have to guarantee them a job in your organization. All it says is that in the interview process, you allow one minority person to be in that process. And it did initially help change things. And even beyond just the fact that some people did get hired after those interviews, it was the point of it was to make sure that minority coaches were getting a chance to be in the interview process, because sometimes they were locked out of it entirely. And now you get to see, even if you don't get the job, you know what an interview's like. You know what kind of questions they're going to ask. And also, say you don't get a job, word gets around of how well you did in an interview, and other teams might say, you know what, I want that guy. Those type of things did have an initial impact. When the Rooney Rule was instituted, there was about... there was a lot of contention about it, but it was 6% of NFL coaches were African American. at the start of 2006, that number jumped up to 22%. And that doesn't even include Mike Tomlin, who would become a head coach in 2007. And so initially, it was a great success. It was being heralded throughout the mid-2000s as of, hey, we figured out diversity in the NFL. And with more black head coaches brought in more black scouts, more black coordinators, more black assistants. And that helped things out. You also saw people, you know, Ron Rivera was a head coach. He's not even black, but he's a minority. And you saw that diversity start to happen. But now, you've seen it come back. And you've seen that rule has kind of been subverted in that, sure, the interviews are still happening, but the hiring practices have kind of reverted. And if you look at 2020 right now, there are 3 African-American head coaches, which is the same amount of black coaches that were in the NFL in 2003 when the Rooney Rule was introduced and made official for the NFL. You look at that and you know who they are: Brian Flores, Anthony Lynn, and Mike Tomlin. And you know, Brian Flores just got there with the Dolphins. Anthony Lynn just got an extension. But Mike Tomlin has yet to have a losing season, is a Super Bowl champion, a 2-time AFC champion, several times over division champion, and just came off an 8-8 year where he lost his franchise quarterback and had to play with a guy that was rookie and undrafted. And no, Tony's not going to come in with a DuckTales song right now as I dog Devlin Hodges. But he just pulled an 8-8 season out of that. And people still want this guy fired. Now, granted, the Steelers don't. But this is the mentality that you hear from people in the city of Pittsburgh. And for some people outside, you know, Jason Whitlock was a guy that used to bash on Tomlin. You know, there's been people that have attacked him for being one of the best coaches in the NFL. When you stack him up against anyone except Bill Belichick, because right now he's the best coach in the NFL and arguably in NFL history, and even though he cheats, you stack him up against anyone else: Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, John Harbaugh. He's right with those guys. Andy Reid now, he just won a Super Bowl. And you could say he's better than, you can make the argument that he's better than those different coaches. You can argue back and say that they're better, but the point is, he's in that conversation. And yet, people, it's a serious conversation for him to be fired. So, the Rooney Rule right now, the standing of it, I look at this and I say, is it enough? Does the Rooney Rule need to expand? Now, Dan Rooney has passed. It's Art Rooney II who's the team owner right now and team president. But you look at it, does it need to go further? Because now you're back to a position where it's kind of just a formality, and owners have kind of subverted it and they're not using it anymore. Especially in a year where you see Eric Bieniemy, who just led, who's the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, didn't even get a shot. And he's sitting there. And I know some people, and this is the interesting argument. Now, I am arguing one way, because I do think they need to expand it. But I am going to say that there are counter arguments. I'm going to go back and forth about what one side says versus another side. And the side for saying that the Rooney Rule needs to be expanded and saying that it's not working anymore, it needs to be maintained at least, but it needs to go further, is that when you look at Bieniemy, and you look at the production he's gotten out of Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense, how could that not excite someone and say, I want that guy as the head coach of my organization? Now, common counter arguments are, he used to be a running backs coach before that. That's not enough. And he needs more time and experience. And B, everyone knows that Andy Reid calls the plays for the Chiefs, and that disqualifies him from being an offense, a head coach, because he isn't the play caller for the offense. Well, a few things about that. One, head coaches don't call plays typically. That's not their job. Their job is to manage. Their job is to keep the team on the right path. Now, you can say, I want to go for it on fourth down. I want to get more aggressive right now. You could talk, but generally, not everybody micromanages like that. A lot of coaches, they're the head coach. They say what they want. They talk to their coordinators, and their coordinators call the plays. The coordinators handle that, because football is such a complex game. So the notion that because Bieniemy doesn't call the plays for the Chiefs, that disqualifies him is ridiculous. And on top of that, you look at his two predecessors at offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, and they got jobs, and they didn't call the plays. Doug Peterson, head coach for the Eagles, he was the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs from 2013 to 2015. In his time with them, they were the 6th scoring offense, the 16th scoring offense, and the 9th scoring offense.
and he got a job with the Eagles, and he's a good coach. He deserved it. But the point was, he got his shot, and now he's a Super Bowl champion coach with another franchise quarterback in Carson Wentz, though he'd run it with Nick Foles. It's another story. And then his successor was Matt Nagy, and Matt Nagy went on. He did 2 years with the Chiefs, and in his first year in 2016, they were the 13th ranked offense, and then the second year they were the 6th ranked offense, and he went on to become head coach of the Chicago Bears, where he still is now. Now the Bears, they're figuring a lot of things out. That's all things aside, but they got their shots. Eric Bieniemy, he comes in first 2 years. They're the number one offense in both yards and points in 2018, which the Chiefs, if you look back through their entire history, the last time that happened was 1966, so that's legendary right there. And then this year they won the Super Bowl, and largely because the offense was ranked number 5 in points, number 6 in yards. And those are all the highest marks of the modern era that the Chiefs have reached, and yet Bieniemy couldn't get a nod. You look at Robert Saleh for the defensive coordinator for the 49ers. He's Lebanese, he's a minority, he's not black, but still, you know, why didn't these guys get nods? And, you know, Joe Judge, the guy who went to the Giants, and other guys, they didn't have the resume that some of these guys have. And to me, it doesn't mean that absolutely these guys are thinking, I don't want black coaches for 100%, and I'm segregating my locker room. But it does show you don't think about it. If you're these owners in these organizations, you didn't look at this objectively and say and look at these guys and say, hey, and maybe one organization did, but you say, hey, I'm going to go through this list, and if you go through all these candidates, you see all these resumes, and this guy, you know, and this is the problem that Rooney Rule talked about. If these guys who have shining resumes that stack up much higher than their competitors, than their counterparts, and you pick the other guys consistently, you know, once or twice, one or two teams do it, that's fine. But there's several teams that have been hiring over the past couple years, and they continue to not hire those guys. I mean, Freddie Kitchens got a job with the Browns. And I get that was because Baker Mayfield wanted him or whatever, but come on. And it's obvious to me, and Bomani Jones brought this up, that, you know, on his podcast for ESPN, but Bomani Jones brought this up and saying it's obvious to me that there is a level of exclusion that happens naturally, because when you look at the numbers of how networking works, networking often involves de facto segregation being just naturally have happened rather than a rule making sure that segregation actually happens. And I look at this, I look at how this has worked out, and to me it says the Rooney Rule may need to be expanded. This is me making an initial case. We're in Black History Month. The Steelers have a lot of stakes in Black history, and I'm going to get more into that tomorrow because it's Throwback Thursday. But I look at this and I see there are a lot of reasons to say that there are more Black coaches needed in the NFL. And you look at Mike Tomlin, and he's a shining example, and people call for his head every day in Pittsburgh. And it's pretty wild to me to see that, but that's the state of the NFL that we're in. So what do you think about the Rooney Rule? Do you like it? Do you not like it? I can tell you right now that a lot of people that know the Rooney Rule and know how the organization works, even Dale Lawley, who I work with, and he gets to talk to some of those guys in the front office, they feel it's necessary, because without it, a lot of guys would lose opportunities and not have jobs in the NFL. And that would the guys that are making up the very small minority that they are. So what's your opinion on this? Like to hear it. Hit me up at Carter Critiques on Twitter. Go in the Locked On Steelers Facebook group. You can start a conversation there. Always down to chat with you guys. Thanks so much for listening to the show. I'll be back tomorrow. Remember, if you're listening to the show and you like what you're hearing, please hit that subscribe button. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever podcasts are hosted. We're there. You can subscribe to us, get your daily fix of Pittsburgh Steelers news and opinions and talk and debate points. We'll get it all here. If you're listening and you like what you're hearing, please leave a 5-star review as well as a positive comment. Those things go a long way to help making the show better. Got a new 5-star review from Garrett AD. Garrett, thank you so much. He said, this is the top Steelers pod. Chris has great analysis, insight, and understands the organization. Looking forward to some deep, but because no first rounds, long live Minka. See you, brother. But looking to deep draft analysis and takes on roster moves. this offseason. And certainly I am going to have a lot to go on the roster moves and the takes going into this season. But all that being said, thanks for watching the show. I'll be back tomorrow with more from Locked On Steelers.